Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
We're going to be in the life of Elijah today. In 2 Kings 4, there is so little written on 2 Kings that it's really hard to do a lesson like this. I want to share with you a book that's so meaningful to me. Really, it's two books. These are two separate volumes by Roland DeVoe. One of them is, Volume 1 is The Social Institutions of Israel. Volume 2 is The Religious Institutions of Israel. Roland DeVoe is a French scholar, and he has done a marvelous job. These books are extensively indexed, just page after page after page. Let me tell you what to do with these books. If you'll buy these, they're paperback, they're very inexpensive. If you'll take a minute in the Bible you study with, for all the books you buy that you like, make a little mark up here. I have a red dot on mine. Maybe you want to put a green star or a purple check. And then in your Bible, by the verses listed in the index, put that check or that star. When you study your Bible, you'll know that you have a book that deals with that verse. And you'll use a book that way. I go in many people's homes who have many religious books that you can look at them and tell they've never been pulled off that shelf. Friends, if you buy those things, why not use them? If you index them, that favorite Bible, you'll buy them. Now, let's turn to 2 Kings chapter 4, and I want to begin right at the front, show you on the map. Now, you need to have a Bible that has a reference edition and maps in the back. If you'll look at that map, I'm using the one on the Canaan divided among the 12 tribes. The city we're going to talk about is Shunem, right there. You see, it's just to the southwest of the Sea of Galilee. There's the Sea of Galilee. And it's in the tribal allocation of Issachar. And that's where Elisha is going to perform this tremendous miracle. There's Mount Carmel. He's going to be over there. The woman's going to run from here to here, about 14 miles, something like that. So let's go to 2 Kings 4, beginning in verse 8. Now there was a man, Now there came a day when Elisha, now that means God is salvation. This man first appears back in 1 Kings 19, where God tells the discouraged Elijah to go and anoint Elisha. Now, he was a farmer. He was plowing. We see his love and his heart in 2 Kings 2, when Elijah said to him, "What would you like me to give you before God takes me to heaven?" Elisha said, "I want a double portion of your spirit." Woo! Elijah was a pretty tough fellow, and Elisha just wanted double of it. He was a hard man, but a soft man. He was a courageous man. He was truly a man of God. Elisha passed over to Shunem, okay? That's that city we're talking about. It's mentioned in Judges 19:18, if you want to look at it there. And there was a prominent woman. It says a great woman. One commentator said she must have been tall, because you wouldn't call a woman rich with her husband alive. I think she was a wealthy woman, not a tall woman. And she persuaded him to eat food. Now, have you ever met somebody, and people you know, who just bubbles over? And can't you see this lady saying, "Oh, I want you to come eat with me. Please come eat with me. Boy, I've got the food fixed." And she persuaded him to come. Every time he went by there, apparently it was a regular circuit he made from Mount Carmel and the surrounding area. Elijah ministered to the northern 10 tribes from about 850 B.C. to 800 B.C., he'd go by and eat with this lady and her family. It became a regular thing with him. And I bet she was just tickled to death over it, and I'm sure he enjoyed it too. Now, and so it was, as often as he passed by, he turned in there to eat food. And she said to her husband, "Behold, now I perceive this is a holy man, a man of God, passing by continually. Please, let's make a little walled upper chamber, and set in there a bed for him, and a table, and a chair, and a lampstand, and it shall be there when he comes that he can turn in there." You know, this was the kind of lady that would invite the preacher over for dinner all the time, you know. And she enjoyed that guy being in her house, and she wanted to build him a little room. Now, what we have in the ancient Orient were flat houses. The roof was flat, and they were used for social events. It was so hot, they'd go up on the roof to sleep in the summer. If they had we would have a backyard barbecue, they'd go up on the roof. Well, they built little houses up there that were mostly open to catch the wind. It was the best place to be in the summertime. She wanted her husband to build this little house for this man. And the husband did it. And the fact that it had a table and chair and a lamp was highly unusual. Our bedrooms, it wouldn't be uncommon to find those things. But in an ancient Near Eastern setting, it was only the bed in the room. So this was really a study retreat for Elisha as well as a place to sleep. Now, whether Gehazi, his servant, sleeps in the same room or somewhere else in the house, I don't know. But what a nice gesture this lady did for this prophet. One day he came there and turned to the upper room chamber and rested. And he said to Gehazi, his servant, call the Shunammite. And when he had called her, she stood before him. And he said to him, say to her, behold, you have been careful for us, means reverent, treat us with awe and respect, something like that. Careful with us, with all this care. What can we do for you? Would you be spoken for to the king or the captain of the army? And she answered, I live among my own people. Well, listen to this. The prophet wanted to say thank you. He didn't know how to say it. He said, look, I'm a man of influence. Have you got a problem? Do you want me to talk to the king about something? Do you want me to talk to the military commander? Is there anything I can do for you at all? And the lady says, no, I live among my own people. These are my friends. I have no problems. I don't need your influence. Now, you know what's neat about this? That lady had not ulterior motive one for asking that man of God to eat with her. There was not one ulterior motive or unwritten agenda when she built that man that little house up on the roof. She just wanted to show her respect for God by doing something for that man. And when the man tries to repay her, she says, listen, I don't need anything. She was wealthy. She had what she needed. She didn't need any favors. She said, no, thank you. Well, the prophet couldn't stand it. He's going to have to do something. So he's going to ask Gehazi. And so he said, then what shall be done for her? And Gehazi answered, truly she has no son and her husband is old. Now in the Old Testament, there was two particular signs of the curse of God or the disfavor of God. One was leprosy and the other was barrenness. This lady had not asked about this at all. But boy, when Elisha heard that, he said, call her back. She'll be holding a baby boy in her arms by this time next year. And the lady says, pshaw. Quit kidding me. She says, quit lying to me. But in the Orient, they're just more outspoken. She wasn't being critical. She said, you're putting me on. Well, this had happened so often. Remember when Sarah heard about this in Judges 18? She giggled in her tent. Well, she was giggling because she thought she was too old and she knew Abraham was too old. Well, that was the situation here. The husband was old. We don't know how old she was. But the husband was way past the age that he ought to be able to father a child. And so Elisha, he has some power with the Lord. He's going to pray this thing through. And sure enough, she's going to have a child next year. Some other examples of this are Manoah and his wife in Judges 13, 2 and following. Hannah in 1 Samuel 1, 3 and following. Elizabeth in the New Testament 1, 39 and following. All past the age of childbearing, all barren. God did a wonderful thing for them. Now, okay. Let's go back to verse 18. When the child was grown, the day came when he went out with his father to the reapers. And he said to his father, my head, my head. And he said to his servant, carrying him to his mother. Well, now the child wasn't grown. He was a young child, able to go with his father. If you're familiar with anybody who lives on a farm, they really enjoy going with daddy to see all the things that happen. This boy wanted to go out at harvest time with the reapers and watch what was happening. But apparently he got a sunstroke. And he comes to his dad, and you can just see the little kid saying, oh, my head, my head. And the daddy says, take him in the house quick and take him to his mother. Well, sunstroke is very common, and for a young child, it was still early in the day, but the boy had a sunstroke, apparently. He had taken him and brought him to his mother, and he sat on her lap until noon, and he died. You can almost see the picture of this child laying on his mother's knees and passing away. Well, she went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God, went upstairs where it was cool, closed the door so nobody would bother him. Now, whether she thought that was a sacred place or not, it doesn't say in the text. And she called to her husband. Apparently, he was close to the house. This whole area, we know, if you look on your map, is a corn-growing area that is just fertile as it can be. It's world-renowned for its corn. And so she called to her husband and said, please send one of the servants and one of the donkeys. Now, that shows their wealth. They had a servant and a donkey, and several of them, that I may run to the man of God in return. And her husband said, why do you want to go today? It's neither a new moon or a Sabbath. And she said, shalom. Well, she doesn't tell the husband the boy is dead. She keeps it a secret from everybody. The husband, when he hears that she wants a donkey and a servant in the middle of harvest, as most husbands would say, there's no revival meeting planned at church tonight. What do you want to go to church for? Why do you want to go see the prophet? It's not the right time. It's not the Sabbath. It's not a new moon festival. What do you want to go see the preacher for now? So the husband was really asking her. All the wife said was, if you look in your text, part of this in italic means it's supplied for English reading. All she said was, shalom, which meant, get off my back, send the donkey, will you? I don't want to explain it to you. the man understood, sent the donkey and the servant. Okay, now, this deal about a new moon, that was confusing to me because new moons are mentioned quite often. It was like a special religious holiday. Now, it's not when the moon is full, this feast. When the first little crescent is seen in the sky, the next day they have a new moon fest. Let me give you a few references. Numbers 10:10, Numbers 28:11 through 15, 1 Samuel 20, 18 through 34, Hosea chapter 1, verse 13, Isaiah 1:13 and 14, and many mentions of that. Mentioned in the book of Colossians is something the Jews were still doing. So he was just saying, hey, there's no planned meeting at church. There's no reason to go to church. Well, anyway, she saddled the donkey and said to her servant, drive and go forward. Now, the ladies in that day would have a special coach that fit on the donkey, but the servant would lead the donkey and run ahead. This servant had a 14 to 17 mile run, and the mother said, I want you to go as fast as you can. Don't worry about me unless I tell you it's too fast. Boy, she wanted to get to this prophet. So she went and came to the man of God to Mount Carmel. If you look on the map, Mount Carmel's right on the seacoast. Modern city of Acre is right there. Okay, that's where apparently Elijah's headquarters were for that area. So he ran there, she ran there, and Elijah saw her coming and said, Gehazi, go out and see what she wants. Ask her if her husband's all right, if she's all right, if her son's all right. Now, I have a book that I like very much, another paperback book, called Customs and Manners of the Bible. And it tries to give you what ancient people did in their customs. And one of the places in there it says that in the East, that if you'll ask somebody how they feel, it's appropriate and polite them to say, I feel fine. But the next sentence may be, but I'm dying. There's a politeness of them that would say, it's okay, before they can really say what they feel. Now, Gehazi goes out and asks this woman, how are you? And all she says again is, shalom. Now, shalom is a word that means the presence of prosperity, the absence of evil. It's a word that can mean hello, goodbye. I guess the translation well or peace is a good translation. She doesn't tell Gehazi. Now, maybe she doesn't want to fiddle with the assistant. I don't know. But she just doesn't go in and explain. She just says, take me to Elisha. And so she's going to be going straight to him. All right? And when she came to the man of God, to the hill, it's really a mountain, she caught hold of his feet. Remember last week where we found that Mary caught hold of Jesus' feet? It's a common way of showing the intensity of emotion. And Gehazi came to push her away. Sounds like the disciples, doesn't it, with Jesus? But the man of God said, let her alone, for her soul is troubled within her. You know, I was when I was studying this morning for that, and I read it the first time, I thought back to those times in my life where those deep religious feelings and emotions have come to me. They're overwhelming. They're almost... You're almost unable to cope with those things. Boy, Elisha knew that. He said, just leave her alone a minute. There's something wrong. She's deeply concerned. And Elisha is very sensitive here. And the Lord had hid it from me and has not told me. Well, this tells this little insight. I don't know how much God informed these prophets on a day-to-day basis of the circumstances around them or the personal lives of their acquaintances. But Elisha was surprised that he did not know this child was dead. He was surprised that he didn't know there was any, that the Lord hadn't told him. But he says, I didn't know anything about it. Now, verse 28. And she said, I did not ask you for a son, my Lord. Did I not say, do not deceive me? Now, she never tells him what the problem is. But by saying, I didn't ask you for a son, I even said, listen, don't kid with me about this. Elijah knew what it was. He said, the boy's dead. He didn't know how. He didn't know why. He just knew the boy was dead. So in verse 29, he said to Gehazi, gird up your loins. Now, I wish I could stand up and show you, but you can just picture in your mind. When you put on a bathrobe or when you wear a robe, you know how you can't run in that. So what the Jews would do who wore robes, they would reach through their legs and pick the back of their robe, and they would pull it through their legs and tuck it in their belt. It would make that robe tight across their thighs. Now, that's what it means when it says, gird up your loins. It means prepare yourself for some kind of physical activity, working in the field, washing the clothes, or running. So he says, get ready to run, and take my staff in your hand. There's something about that staff that was so significant to Moses, symbol of God's presence and power. Well, Elisha had one of those, and he gave it to the servant to run and lay over the boy. Now, why the urgent need here, I don't know, but the servant runs ahead of him. Now, apparently the lady thinks that that's all that Elisha is going to do. That's what she says in verse 30. The mother of the lad said, as the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you. What she was doing was taking a religious oath. She said, if you think under God this is all you're going to do, you got another thing coming. I ain't leaving this spot till you come to my boy. Well, Elijah rose and followed her. And Gehazi passed on before them and laid the staff on the lad's face, but there was neither sound nor response. It didn't work. Surprise you? It didn't work. So he returned and met him and told him, and the lad has not awakened. Now, the idea of sleep as a metaphor for death is an Old Testament metaphor that Jesus uses. We saw it last week of Lazarus, and so it's an Old Testament metaphor. When Elijah came to the house, behold, the lad was dead and laid on the bed. Now, there's no question the boy is dead, okay? So he entered and shut the door behind them both and prayed to the Lord. Now, it seems that they came in the room too. But later on in verse 36, apparently he closed the door and they were on the outside of the room and he was on the inside. Now, he wanted to pray by himself. And he went up and lay on the child and put his mouth on his mouth, his eyes on his eyes, his hands on his hands, and stretched himself on him, and the flesh of the child became warm. Now, many have said he's trying to resuscitate him. Well, that's possible, because maybe it was the heat from Elijah, the reason the boy got warm. The boy's not going to come back to life right now. He's going to get warm. Now, maybe Elisha was trying to do what Elijah did back in 1 Kings 17. I don't know. I don't think it's a modern CPR procedure where you just push on someone's chest and breathe for them. That's not what he's doing. There's some kind of symbolism here of his life going to the boys. But I don't think it's a modern resuscitation practice. But I want to take what happens. It doesn't work. Does not work. The prophet gets up, starts walking back and forth in the room, back and forth, and comes and does it again. And it works. It works. When I read this, I thought, you know, this reminds me a lot of some of the things that Jesus did in the New Testament. Remember how many times Jesus cured blind people that's recorded? And every time he did it, he did it in a different way. One time he just spoke. Other times he would take them aside and touch their eyelids. Other times he would make spit and mud and put it on their eyes, make them go wash in the pool of Siloam or something. One time Jesus tried to heal a blind man, and he touched his eyes and all, and he said, "Can you see?" And the guy said, "No, I see men walking like trees," which means Jesus' cure didn't take the first time. Now, what's the deal here? Well, I'm not sure I have all the answers, but it's obvious in the Bible that Jesus didn't cure that man the first time, either because of the man's lack of faith and Jesus was working with him, or Jesus tried another technique. And I believe Jesus is God. He could say, do it, and it happened. But many times he took more time to help promote the faith of the people involved. Now, here, there's nobody else in the room. Elisha is by himself. And what he tries first, the staff doesn't work. So he lays himself on the boy just like he'd seen Elijah or heard about Elijah do. It did not work. Don't you know that prophet was walking back and forth praying? Oh God, help me. And he went back and did the very same thing again. And it worked. Now I think there's something here of God working with Elisha. You see, I think God wanted to see that, first place, Elisha was serious, and Elisha was going to stick to it. It's kind of like that, keep on seeking, keep on knocking. It's like the parable of the judge. There's a judge that helped that woman, not because that woman asked the first time, but that woman kept bothering that judge, and finally that judge said, okay, what do you want? There's a persistence in prayer that God looks for. And I think God's working with Elisha, as much as he's healing this young boy. I don't know why else these different techniques did not work. Now, and he said to Gehazi, call the Shunammite. So he called her, and when she came to him, he said, take up your son. Boy, can't you see that scene? Then she went in and fell at his feet and bowed herself to the ground. And she shook up her son and went out, took up her son and went out. Well, I tell you what, that's just a marvelous story. The details here are so real. It's like you're right there in the living room, just watching over the shoulder, isn't it? The little boy grabbing his head, saying, oh, my head, my head. The friendly woman not wanting any favors from the prophet. You know, this whole thing, running to Mount Carmel, Elisha trying these several techniques, none of them work, walking back and forth in the room. Boy, it's just like we're right there, and the writer is just capturing these details. Because you see, there are still some people who think, well, the boy wasn't dead, he's just passed out. And some people have such problems with miracles. They try to make this magic that Elijah was trying different kinds of magic. Friends, I believe Elisha knew the God of heaven. I believe in a supernatural God that's able to accomplish whatever he wants to through whatever means he wants to. I think God's working with Elisha as well as this Shunammite woman. I think he's working with Gehazi, the servant. You see, I have no problems with God doing miracles. I don't want to force God to do miracles, because I know from Matthew 24:24, it says, in the last days are going to come false prophets and do many signs and wonders and lead even the elect astray if possible. Friends, the miraculous is not automatically the sign of God. But God is a supernatural God. And this is not a closed system. God is involved actively in his world. I think he loved that boy. I think he loved that woman. I think he wanted to work with that prophet. So I don't think it's kind of like, was Jairus' daughter really dead? Was the man who fell out of the second floor room when Paul was preaching, was he really dead? Was Lazarus, they're dead, friends. Was Jesus really dead? Yeah, he's really dead. There is really a God that can bring back to decaying matter the spirit of life. And that's the God that Elijah knew. And that's the God that's recorded this. Now, these miracles, Elisha and Elijah's miracle was something special. We don't have all of that in the other prophets of the Old Testament. It was a special time, a unique need. I think God can still do it if he wants to. But I think he often doesn't choose to do it that way. That doesn't bother me. He's God. He can do what he wants to. I'm just glad that I can know him through Christ. I hope you'll take time to finish reading a few more chapters in 2 Kings. It'll bless you about the life of Elijah. There's going to be some very hard things to understand. He's going to call down some bears to eat some kids who make fun of him. But here's a woman who has real respect for him, and he just goes the second and third mile to help that lady. He was a strange combination of a tough old boy and just a marshmallow heart. God can do that to you. I hope you'll think about these books. I want to mention to you again, they're really significant. I mention these books from time to time. I hope that you'll think about buying them. Buy them for your wife or husband for a Christmas present. The Ancient Israel, Volumes 1 and 2, The Religious Institutions, The Social Institutions, very heavily indexed, will really be a good asset for your library, and especially on the Old Testament, customs and manners of the day. I have so enjoyed being with you, and I'll see you again, same time, same place, next week. God bless you.